The time is 6:09.
Public Radio comes
on Tuesday, June 14th. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. San Francisco Giants outfielder Barry Bonds passed Babe Ruth's record for career home runs. He's 9 homers away from breaking Hank Aaron's record, too. Some fans are angry that he might, though, because he has allegedly used steroids. Our guest this hour says the anger may run deeper than that. The hatred for Barry Bonds might stem from racism. If that's true, then why would white fans want to preserve the record set by Hank Aaron, who's also black? We'll talk about the issue with our guest and with you this hour. What do you think? Does Bonds deserve the record? Is there racism in baseball but not other sports? And when is it okay to cheat, and when is it not? Our toll-free number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, dial 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also reach us online. Talk at WPR.org is our email address. And we welcome by telephone Professor Warren Goldstein, professor and chair of history at the University of Hartford. He specializes in 20th century American history and is the author of several books, including A Brief History of American Sports. He wrote a recent article, The Conundrum That Is Barry Bonds, for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Good morning, Professor Goldstein.
Good morning, John.
Thanks for taking time out at this early hour of the day to talk with our listeners.
It's earlier for you.
Right, it is. The premise of your article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, which prompted our phone call to you about doing this program, is that white people hate Barry Bonds more than black people.
Well, that's not a premise. That's true. That's what polls say. That's what, except in San Francisco, I think that's what you can see in every major league ballpark that that Bonds plays in. I mean, I was very struck, even last season, to see the way in which Bonds was not only booed, but there seemed to be a special vitriol directed at him every time he came to the plate. And since the fans doing that booing were overwhelmingly white, it made me extremely uncomfortable. And I tried to figure out why that might be, both my discomfort and whether there was something more there.
Well, to begin with, I've never met Barry Bonds, so I don't have any personal knowledge of this. But the stories about Barry as a player through his career haven't exactly painted a portrait of somebody you'd want to spend a lot of time with.
Absolutely not. You don't want your sister bringing him home for a Thanksgiving dinner. On the other hand, most of what we see of Barry Bonds is filtered through sports writers. Bonds distrusts sports writers. Sports writers make their living by interviewing baseball players. And when a player doesn't talk to sports writers, it begins a kind of a cycle, which is very hard to break.
But certainly Barry Bonds isn't the only baseball player ever to not like reporters.
No, he's not.
Why does he get the special treatment? Is it just because of the possible home run record?
You know, Bonds, long before he got close to the record, wasn't treated terribly well by sports writers because he didn't like them and mistrusted them. And I think it's a bad relationship gone worse. The accusations about steroid use have made it even worse. And I think that, you know, I don't think that Bonds is a terribly pleasant fellow. And he thinks of himself as a bit of a victim, and it's hard to imagine how someone who has the money that he has and the talent that he has and the adulation that he has in San Francisco can paint himself as a victim. So people respond to that. I fully understand why people don't like Barry Bonds. I think, though, that among white folks, there seems to be a little something extra. And I think that the classic response, and I've had this conversation with dozens of friends of mine, Bonds is a jerk. And they generally don't just say the word jerk. They say a worse word. Masks something a little deeper. There are a lot of people that are jerks among professional athletes. Bonds seems to excite a special hatred. And I don't think it's only about steroid use.
Well, it's that's a great point. I mean, a lot of people think A.J. Pierzynski, for example, isn't a very nice person, and yet they just kind of laugh it off. Oh, that's just A.J. being A.J. But Barry seems to get a different level of feeling, particularly among sports writers, as you pointed out. And he doesn't get covered in the regular news except when there's an indictment hanging over his head, as there is potentially now. A lot of discussion about whether or not he will be indicted for perjury.
Absolutely.
The suggestion is that he lied to a grand jury in the investigation over steroid use. And so, you know, a lot of controversy swirling around Barry Bonds, which makes for good press. And it's always a great story when you've got some controversy. So, you know, I would think that sports writers would love the guy because he's always good for a couple of inches of print. We're going to check the weather and then we'll allow some of our callers to join us. Let me give the phone numbers. There are still some phone lines open. What do you think about Barry Bonds potentially breaking the record set by Hank Aaron? Does that matter to you? Is this an issue? Do you think it's a problem because of the accusations of steroid use? What's your feeling on it? Here's the phone number to call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That number good anywhere you can hear this broadcast. In Madison, please call us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this morning. Coming up later, after 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guest discuss the escalating fighting between rival Palestinian factions Hamas and Fatah, which is looking more and more like civil war. That's after 9 o'clock this morning. Right now, though, Barry Bonds is the person that we're discussing. And let me give the phone numbers once more before we get back into our program. 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number. If you'd like to use the internet, talk@WPR.org. And in Madison, it's 263-1890, please. We are talking with Professor Warren Goldstein, who is professor and chair of the history department at the University of Hartford. He specializes in 20th century American history and is the author of several books, including A Brief History of American Sports. He wrote a recent piece, The Conundrum That Is Barry Bonds, for the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is the basis for this morning's program. Professor, it looks like there are a number of people who want to join us by phone, so I think I'm going to go right to phone calls, and we'll start with Krista in Neillsville. Krista, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, I just had to sigh when I heard your topic today, and I only have one thing to say, and that's that I've got friends out in San Francisco who are black and who are Asian, all of which dislike Barry Bonds. And you know, when you bring up a topic like, is people's dislike for Barry Bonds racism, I think the only thing that you're doing is really, hurting in general race relations. For when you're talking about disliking somebody who's unpleasant, like as you said, as Barry Bonds, and really not only to the press, but sort of generally to the public, kind of a jerk, then and who's clearly had doping issues, which I think a lot of people resent, then when people hear that, I think it detracts from real racism issues that are going on in the world and in places where there clearly are racism issues, where it clearly is hurting people. So that's all I wanted to say. And in general, I really enjoy your show, and I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I think that I'm delighted that Krista called, and I'm delighted that she said what she did, because it's a point of view that a lot of folks have, and I'd like to talk about it. First off, everyone knows, there are certainly black people who don't like Barry Bonds. I wasn't writing about individual opinions here so much. I'm struck by the recent ESPN ABC News poll suggesting that there is an enormous difference between black and white baseball fans on Barry Bonds, which is not really addressed by Krista's friends in San Francisco. 74% of black fans in that poll, as opposed to 29% of white fans, want Barry Bonds to break the record. It seems to me that as thinking human beings concerned about race right now, we have to look at that number and figure out, how could that be? How could you have a disparity of 2.5 times on that issue if race is not a part of the equation? So I am a historian. And I went into and I began looking more carefully at the history of sports and race in this country. And I think that however much you may dislike Barry Bonds now, he fits into, there are patterns in American sports history that Bonds is a piece of. We now think of Muhammad Ali as a kind of iconic American hero and kind of all-around teddy bear. But Muhammad Ali was considered even in harsher terms by most white sports fans, boxing fans, and Americans in the early 1960s. He was in a tradition of an uppity, pardon the expression, proud, defiant black man in a white culture, and all sorts of white folks who would say that they are not racist didn't like him because of a certain kind of cultural style. So much so, by the way, that the U.S. government even pursued him. He had to, you know, we tend to forget this, but Muhammad Ali had to go all the way to the Supreme Court to establish his right to conscientious objector status during the Vietnam War. That made him incredibly unpopular, and when he connected race and sports and politics, he became an incredibly unpopular man among white folks and much more popular among African Americans. There's a deep history of racial issues in American sports. And as much as we would like to think ourselves in 2007 as beyond those issues, there are uncomfortable similarities.
In the case of Muhammad Ali, was it when he changed his name and decided and his religion, or he became a religious person and a conscientious objector, that really turned the tide in terms of public opinion? He had won a gold medal in the Olympics, and a number of people, I think, maybe perceived him as cute and funny, and then all of a sudden he changes his name to Muhammad Ali. He's not Cassius Clay anymore, and now he's not going to be drafted into the Army like so many other young Americans were of that time period. Was that really what changed it, or was he always regarded as somebody who wasn't very likable?
No, of course he got much more unpopular among white Americans when he joined the Nation of Islam, and you know was seen alongside Malcolm X, whom many white Americans feared. But in my own life, I remember I grew up in what I thought was a liberal democratic family, in which we supported civil rights. I'm 56, to give you some sense of what I'm talking about. And it was understood in my own family that Muhammad Ali was just awful. Why? Because he seemed to push the envelope of proper behavior. We never said, because he was an uppity black man, but there were a set of behaviors that unconsciously, I think, were racist. It took me a long time to figure that out. I couldn't understand why I had been so anti-Muhammad Ali when I was a kid, but it seems to me pretty clear that a lot of white folks react unconsciously to such behavior. It's easier for a lot of white fans to cheer for Michael Jordan than it was for Allen Iverson, or is for Allen Iverson, for instance.
Well, and also take Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell. I mean, there were a lot of divided opinions on those two basketball players as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, Bonds got into, I mean, one of the interesting things about Bonds is that he knows baseball history, and he has a family history with a really deep pedigree in African Americans in sports. His father played Major League Baseball for 14 seasons. His godfather is Willie Mays, who began his career with the Birmingham Black Barons and then came to the New York Giants in 1951. Bonds knows something about that history. You know, there was some controversy several years ago because a Boston sports writer asked him whether he might consider ending his career as a designated hitter with the Boston Red Sox. actually not a bad idea if he wanted to boost his home run totals. And Bond said, no, man, Boston's way too racist for me. It was that way when my dad played there, and I don't want any part of it. And the sports writer tried to say, you know, things have changed a little bit. And Bond says, it ain't changed.
Let's go to the phones again. We'll take a call from John in Waukesha. John, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, you know, I've seen those polls, too, and it is kind of confusing as to why there should be such a big difference in the views toward Bonds and breaking the record. But I don't think it's racism, at least with most people. I think there's another explanation. A lot of people, like myself, grew up idolizing Henry Aaron. And I think the ill feeling toward Bonds is more toward the fact that a person that was so revered by so many people is going to be diminished somewhat because his record is going to be broken. And you talk about how you've gone to these games and you see all these white people expressing all this hatred toward Barry Bonds. But the fact is, most people, the vast majority of people who go to baseball games are white. I mean, that's just, you look in the crowd and it's a overwhelmingly white audience.
That's
and
been my experience.
I think the feelings that yours are, these different feelings are just purely numbers that you would expect from the people who went to baseball games when Henry Aaron was playing and who grew up idolizing him. And I know that I'm not a racist. I don't, and I know that I don't want Barry Bonds to break Henry Aaron's record. And it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with the fact that I grew up idolizing Henry Aaron.
You know, first off, you're entirely welcome to your, opinions about Aaron. And the reverence for Aaron clearly has something to do with people being uneasy about Bonds. But I want to say some difficult things here, and I appreciate your call, but I want to say some things that I'm sure that you're going to find hard. I would like to be able to say, as a white person attentive to racial issues, that, quote, I know I'm not a racist. But I know actually something quite different. I was raised in a racist society. I was raised with racist images all around me. I was raised with racist jokes around the corner. What I know is that the best language that I have for it, I learned from a friend of mine, I'm a recovering racist. I think I know I am, and I try not to be. And I think the white folks who claim with such deep certainty that I know that I am not a racist, is not persuasive to anybody who's not white. So that's a part about racism which is hard for us to grasp, and yet it strikes me as essential to understanding its power. Racism continues. It continues unconsciously. And so I don't think we can be so certain that I know that I am not a racist. After all, what white person ever admits that a negative feeling about a black person is due to racism? We just don't do it. So I am trying not to point individual fingers and say that you are a racist. But I am trying to suggest that there are racist feelings that we are unaware of, and that there's a kind of there are structures that help feed that. And that black athletes know it. They know that they get treated differently. They know that if they walk outside of certain norms of behavior, the negative feeling that comes down on them, the criticism that comes down on them, is more intense.
We're at news time. We're going to have to pick this thought up when we come back, right after the news. I'm John Munson, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:35. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back from vacation on Monday. This hour, we're talking about Barry Bonds, who is on the verge of breaking Hank Aaron's home run record, and who is awash in controversy, and has been in large measure, or some measure, throughout his career due to a stormy relationship with reporters and a personality which is, let's just say, somewhat abrasive. Our guest this hour suggests that Bonds' race also plays a factor in whether or not we cheer for him to break Hank Aaron's home run record, or not. And our guest is Professor Warren Goldstein. He's professor and chair of the history department at the University of Hartford. He specializes in 20th century American history and is the author of several books, including A Brief History of American Sports, and he also wrote a recent piece for the Chronicle of Higher Education titled The Conundrum That Is Barry Bonds. Well, Professor, we've mentioned Barry Bonds and his personality, and we've compared him to some other baseball players and even basketball players. But what about other sports? I mean, are the same concerns true for, say, football players as well?
They don't seem to be. And I confess that I don't know the history of football nearly as well as I know the history of baseball and some other sports. But no, we don't see the same kinds of issues. Although, you know, people who know football better than I do would point to particular black players who seem to excite the ire of fans because they hot dog. The whole issue of black athletes and black athletic style seems to how do I want to put this? The hot dogging style of the showy celebrating style of African-American athletes often grates on the sensibilities of white folks. Certainly they did on my father. We used to have enormous battles over Reggie Jackson, who could be a phenomenal hitter, often a mediocre outfielder, but his tooting his own horn, his immense ego, which he never tired of talking about, putting himself into the third person in the way that politicians do, just grated on the cultural style of middle-class white people, whereas black folks, black fans, seem to enjoy the hell out of it. And I think these are racial differences, not always racism, but certainly racial differences about athletes.
Oh, for my part, I was a huge Reggie Jackson fan. I just loved watching him play because it looked like
he had. Where did you see him play?
Well, I mean, I saw him on television. Mm-hmm. I never saw him play in person. But back when NBC still had the game of the week,
yes.
I used to watch baseball on television. I must confess that I don't now. I mainly listen to it on the radio. But I liked Reggie Jackson, and I liked the Oakland A's because they were different.
Sure.
With the white shoes, and they were controversial, and they were challenging the establishment. I guess I must have been going through my rebellious phase at that point. What about now? Our the caller we took before the news, and we're going to go back to the phones in just a moment, is from Wisconsin, and Hank Aaron played baseball in Wisconsin and Milwaukee for many years and then went
sure.
to Atlanta. So I think in Wisconsin you're probably going to find a little bit different feeling about Hank Aaron and his record, because he finished his career with the Milwaukee Brewers as a designated hitter. And you're going to find a little bit of a different feeling about Hank Aaron in Wisconsin than you would in other places. Or even, he's looked at differently in Atlanta. But he got a lot of hate mail. He had death threats when he was approaching Babe Ruth's record. There were a lot of people who didn't want him to break the record. Is the feeling about Barry Bonds similar to the feeling that was against Hank Aaron when he was getting close to the record?
Well, I mean, yes, in the sense that I think both draw on wells of racial hatred. But clearly, what Hank Aaron had to put up with had a kind of he did this with a kind of dignity and, class, I think people would say. That was extraordinary. And I understand why people would revere Henry Aaron, and especially in your area, but also in Wisconsin, but also around the country, certainly in Atlanta as well. I don't think, however, that, there are plenty of baseball fans who simply aren't old enough to have grown up revering Hank Aaron. And what we know is that, I don't know what percentage of white fans, because I haven't seen the polling on that, and I don't know if people did polling on it, the persistence of racism well into the 1970s, how could someone as classy and dignified and powerful and skillful and talented as Henry Aaron, How could he receive death threats about breaking Babe Ruth's record if race isn't a powerful issue in American sports?
Well, I don't have an answer to that question. Let's go back to the phones and take a call from June in Shawano. June, you're on the air. Good morning. Thanks for calling, and thanks for holding.
Good morning. I don't disagree with your guess that racism exists in sports and in other life. Here in Wisconsin, we have to continually combat race among the Hmong people who have come here and the Native Americans. However, I feel badly that you challenged the last guest, saying that he could possibly be racist because he grew up revering Henry Aaron. I'm older than he, and I grew up revering Henry Aaron, too. And I don't think that my black son and my black husband would think I'm a racist. It always hurts when records are broken and you have someone who has gone through what Henry Aaron did with class and with so much difficulty and who still stands up and speaks for black baseball players and black coaches and carries forth the torch of Jackie Robinson. I think he himself has said that if Griffey Jr. had broken the record and he thought he had a chance of doing it, we would be kind of feeling less, you know. It's all right for people to make designations about the questionable business about steroids. Look at Mike McGuire. I mean, he's white. We don't want him to break the record either.
Of course, he won't because he retired. But
exactly.
there was a controversy over his use of, let's just say, performance-enhancing drugs. In his case, he said it was creatine. There have been a lot of accusations thrown around. Let's talk a little bit about the steroid accusations about Barry Bonds. How, Professor, how much does that figure into this this whole equation of whether we like Barry or not?
Well, it obviously figures a lot. But one is compelled to look at comparisons and to look at the history of cheating in sports and baseball. Jason Giambi in New York, where I live, is revered by fans, even though he is the commissioner has asked him to meet with them to talk about what he did in terms of steroids. He offers non-apology apologies about his steroid use, and then is revered by New York fans. And frankly, around the country, people don't boo Jason Giambi when he comes to bat. I realize he's not breaking the record, but here's someone who's in baseball right now and has done everything but admit that he used steroids and isn't facing much opprobrium at all.
Well, and you also mentioned in your article some players who are in the Hall of Fame who, for example, Gaylord Perry. I mean, he made kind of a joke about throwing the spitball and the Vaseline ball and this and that, you know, and used a number of substances that he applied to the baseball to have an edge when he was pitching. And there, Whitey Ford was accused of that. There were a number of baseball players throughout the history of the game that it's sort of been wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Oh, isn't that cute? But with Barry Bonds, it seems to be a little different.
Well, there is a history of cheating, but I want to acknowledge, I mean, clearly people are upset about steroid and performance-enhancing drugs, steroid use and use of performance-enhancing drugs in sports. On the other hand, how do we want to talk about this? People didn't seem to be so upset at players drinking. They didn't seem to be so upset when Mark McGuire was just using human growth hormone and not when he was using, as opposed to a steroid. I think that we're a little we're not completely consistent in what we expect of our athletic heroes. And those folks who are involved in sports will take any advantage they can. You know, one of the most interesting things that I've seen written about this whole issue is, you know, when people think about maybe putting an asterisk next to Barry Bonds' record, why don't we turn around and put an asterisk next to the records of all of the white players who didn't have to play against black players?
Well,
the game of baseball has changed over the years, and there are all kinds of ways of cheating. And a lot of the time, we've actually thought that cheating was wonderful. Mike King Kelly, who was the Irish-American most popular baseball player of the late 19th century, used to try to distract umpires and cut from first to third all the time. Cheating has, I mean, the cheating that the New York Giants were engaging in the last days of the last half of the 1951 season means that Bobby Thompson may have known what pitch Ralph Branca was throwing.
We're at weather time. We'll come back and pick this conversation up in just a moment. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:48. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back on Monday. If home improvement and renovation projects are on your mind, check in with our housing expert after 11 this morning. Larry Mueller's guest is UW-Madison Professor Emeritus John Merrill of the School of Human Ecology. That's after 11 this morning. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour is Warren Goldstein, professor and chair of the history department at the University of Hartford. He specializes in 20th century American history and is the author of several books, including A Brief History of American Sports. Recently, he wrote an article for the Chronicle of Higher Education titled The Conundrum That Is Barry Bonds. And we have a number of individuals who would like to join us by phone. Let's go back to the phones, and first we'll talk with Tina in Fitchburg. Tina, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying the conversation today, and particularly the fact that the guest is so knowledgeable about how racism can impact people, and as a white person, you might not even realize it unless you went to the trouble to really understand it. In life, we usually hear sports analogies of different things. Well, I like to give you a doll analogy that could relate to helping people understand racism a little better. African-American female wanted to go purchase a doll for her African-American granddaughter and has to go to the third store and still doesn't find a selection of dolls that are African-American. Now, there are gobs of dolls that are white, but very few. By the time she gets to the third store, and I'm speaking of myself, and this happened real recently, I broke down in frustration because I'm 60 years old, and you put up with stuff for so long that after a while it's like, if I were a white mother with a white granddaughter and I wanted to get a doll that looked like her, I would go to the first store and I wouldn't have to go to other stores, wouldn't have to spend my time or call in to find out that I have to spend $13 meal and charges if I want to get this particular doll. So those kind of things that African Americans have to go through on a daily basis, or other people would might say they're not racist. As an African-American, I think it's institutionalized racism that you don't have a selection there. If you have 10 dolls, have one or two that are Hispanic or black. You know, that is the kind of thing that perpetuates a person getting to the stage of where Barry Bonds is, and then if he doesn't have to put up with some of this stuff, then he says, to heck with them, I don't need them. And that might be his attitude, the reason why he has that attitude, because that happens to a lot of African-American men, because, you know, I went through that frustration yesterday and was totally emotionally shot. That doesn't happen to me that often because we grow up knowing that we have to do so much more in the same world to achieve and accomplish the same thing that anyone else would in the majority society, what is considered the majority society. And so a lot of that frustration builds and builds, and then you might see someone say, like a Muhammad Ali, I don't give a darn. I don't have to put up with this mess anymore, because people do reach a pinnacle where they feel that way. But what happens then, public opinion around that person goes down, 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 particularly in the white community. And that's where you'll see the variances of someone who understands what happens day to day to a person. And then when you get to a certain point in your life, you say, to heck with it. And not everybody does that. Some people can control it forever, but other people have to let it out every once in a while.
Thank you so much for saying those things. I feel for your experience yesterday, but the most important thing to me about what you just said, and you said a whole lot of really important things, is that white folks need to get some sense of what it is to walk in the shoes of people of another race. And you just did that, and that's really hard for us to do. You know, I was really helped in this by an extraordinary book by the African-American New York Times sports columnist, William Roden, R-H-O-D-E-N. And he wrote a book called $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete. And what the book is about is a kind of a counter-narrative of the history of African-Americans in American sports. Most white folks like to run the highlight reel that sort of goes from Jackie Robinson to Muhammad Ali, and the modern Muhammad Ali, the fellow who is nice to everyone and easy to embrace. That reel also includes Arthur Ashe and Hank Aaron. But the fact is that American sports history around race issues is a whole lot more complicated. And Roden talks about something that he calls the jockey syndrome, that he builds on the story of the racing business, which was dominated by African-American jockeys in the U.S. in the 1890s, which turned out to be a horrible decade for African-Americans. And after this fellow, Isaac Murphy, who made a lot of money at the time, he was effectively the equivalent of a millionaire, the white racing establishment counterattacked, and black jockeys got harassed on the track by white jockeys. The new racing association barred black jockeys from membership. White horse owners stopped hiring black jockeys. Murphy was accused of drinking. I mean, in a field in which everybody drank, Murphy's drinking was singled out. And 5 years after he was at the pinnacle of the sport, he was run out of the sport and he died. This is something that happened over and over again in American sports history to African Americans, and this is something that Roden really talks about in some detail, and really helped me see the way in which there are patterns in American sports history that make white folks extremely uncomfortable, but African Americans experience and expect. And that's something that most white folks would rather not think about. We want to think about racial reconciliation. We want to think about the American dream coming true, and I want that to be the case, too. I love the Jackie Robinson story. I've written about it. I teach about it. I speak about it. I think it's one of the great stories in American sports history. I'm not sure it's an emblematic or representative story.
Let's get another caller in here before the program is over with, and we'll go next to Steve in Fish Creek. Steve, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I have some sympathies for your guest, trying to get people to come to realize that there's some kind of subtext operating continuously, that and when you don't realize it, you aren't aware of it. As a Scotch, Irish, Dutch, Welsh, French, English, German, American, I was sent to Cuba as a journalist, and I got to experience a culture that I first of all realized was made up of Spaniards, black African slaves, and Chinese indentured servants who were all brought to Cuba after they killed off the indigenous people. And those three cultures blended into the first rainbow that I've ever experienced in my life, coupled with the fact that Castro made racism illegal, a crime you could be put in jail for. I was in social experiences covering the art scene in Cuba where I met people who were all shades of skin color. There is no race gene, but there's something operating in the brain of a person who's raised in this culture, in my brain, that I realized was there for the first time, that I realized I was meeting a person and putting a mark, black person, Chinese, Asian person, blah, 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 blah. I was categorizing people by race, and all of a sudden I couldn't do it anymore because the shades were all blended, and there was no way to categorize, and I stopped thinking about it. Finally,
what a great experience.
I got rid of the categorization. Now, I spent the last 6 months in China. Occasionally I would get emails from my friends that would say, gosh, it must be strange to be a white person in China, and I'd say, I think all of a sudden, I don't even think that way anymore. I don't walk around in a culture thinking of myself as a white person. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, it's like the Truman Show. Once you get out of the dome and you go back in the dome, you realize, oh, that's what I used to do.
Now you know the dome was there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're almost out of time, and I want to make sure I give the professor a chance to wrap up the discussion. I don't mean to chase you off here, but that was a great call to end on, I think.
It was indeed, and I want us to get there as quickly as possible. You know, people worry that by, and I've gotten a couple of emails about this, that by identifying these issues, I'm driving people apart rather than helping them get together. I want us to be able, I don't think that you can solve issues of race and racial conflict in this country unless we understand who we are a little bit better. Think, for instance, last thing I'll leave you with, about Shoeless Joe Jackson, who is the hero in certain ways of the movie Field of Dreams. You know, Joe Jackson is someone who admitted taking $5,000 to throw the World Series, and yet there's a movement of people to get him into the Hall of Fame.
It's crazy.
So I'm going to enjoy Barry Bonds breaking the record.
I think I will, too, after listening to the explanation here. Thank you very much, Professor Goldstein, for joining us this morning. Warren Goldstein is professor and chair of history at the University of Hartford and specializes in 20th century American history. This was program 614A. If you'd like a copy of it, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Leo Duran produced it. Christina Taylor did on-air production.